Hello, and welcome to a special episode of PwC's CFO Direct podcast series, your source for technical accounting matters, business issues, current standard setting, and regulatory updates. I'm Heather Horn, a partner in our national office, and I'll be your host today. In today's podcast, we're going to provide some observations from our review of comments on the new revenue standard from SEC comment letters posted to EDGAR through October 2018. We'll discuss some of the areas where we've seen comments, and we'll give some broader observations as well. In doing this, we will touch on some of the key areas of disclosure from the standard, but I would also encourage you to check out episode 25 of our podcast series, where we go into more detail on the disclosure requirements. Joining me today are Michelle Dion, a senior manager in our revenue group in the national office, and David McLean, a senior manager in our SEC services group. Both Michelle and David have spent quite a bit of time following the new revenue standard, including examining the comment letters, and I'm very interested to hear what they have to say today. So thanks for joining us. And I'll start with you, Michelle. I know we released a podcast on revenue comment letter comments in June, and now it's less than 6 months later, and we're coming back with an update. So I guess just a question for you, now that there are more letters that are available, what areas are we seeing comments in, or are we seeing a lot of changes from what we saw before?
Yeah, thanks, Heather. So the SEC has issued comments to registrants across multiple industries and covers a variety of topics. You know, we are still working with somewhat of a limited population, given that it does generally take about 20 days after a comment is cleared by the SEC to be released on EDGAR and therefore become public to us to be able to review. And so with that, I do just want to caveat that this is still just based on public comment letters.
Yep, makes sense.
And with those comment letters that we have had a chance to review, we are seeing that the areas are generally consistent with what we did see earlier on. However, there are a few new ones, and definitely a lot more detail has been provided by the staff in their comments. But these areas are, as expected, where the most judgment is required, and they include identifying performance obligations, estimating transaction price, timing of revenue recognition, principal versus agent determination, and capitalized costs related to revenue contracts.
So with that, let's jump right into the first area of comments related to performance obligations. So David, can you give us a sense of the type of comments we're seeing there?
Yeah, sure. So the staff's comments in this area really revolve around what are the distinct goods or services that are being provided to a customer. That is the promise to provide a distinct good or service or the performance obligation. You know, what is that? Because that's really the fundamental assessment to the application of the entire model. So in terms of the types of comments that we're seeing the staff ask about the nature of performance obligations. That is, what is the actual promise to provide a good or a service to the customer? Combining multiple performance obligations into a single unit of account, as well as disclosures around unsatisfied or partially unsatisfied performance obligations, as well as things like significant payment terms. So these are all areas where the staff has asked for clarity around the disclosures.
So it sounds like basically any place related to performance obligations where there's some element of judgment, the staff is wanting to make sure things are fully disclosed. At least that looks like what we're seeing.
That's right.
Okay, very good. Thank you. So I know, Michelle, you said we've seen comments on estimating transaction price. So can you give us a sense of the comments we've seen in that area?
Yeah, for sure, Heather. So as you mentioned, this is a judgmental area when there are estimates that are required in estimating the transaction price. So under the new standard, it does require an entity estimate the transaction price for a contract. So that would mean that they would need to include any variable fees, such as maybe performance bonuses, refunds, or credits that they expect to issue. And the comments that we've been seeing in this area are really around understanding the types of variable consideration which a registrant may have included. They also want to better understand what the company's estimation process is. So in some cases, you know, there may even be new estimates that a company may have had to add to their process as part of adopting 606. And therefore, it's really not that surprising that the staff is asking about those new estimation processes that the company may have had to do to estimate their transaction price. Some of the less common areas that we've seen under transaction price is classification of payments to customers and significant financing components. needs.
Okay, so it sounds like it's actually similar to what David said, which is, again, providing maybe more transparency around how companies have complied with the standard, and particularly, as we've said, in areas of judgment.
Yep, that's right.
So with that, maybe we can move to another area of judgment. I can see a theme here, and that would be the timing of recognition of revenue. So David, what types of things should companies be looking for in this area?
Yeah, so the comments in this area have really all been around the timing of when control transfers. So one of the things, for example, that we've seen in the accounting policies is that a company might disclose that it recognizes revenue at a point in time. Well, we've seen the staff come back and ask, you know, at what point in time is revenue actually recognized? And to explain to us any judgments that go into determining when control of the promised good or service actually transfers to the customer. Other less common areas of comment have included things like the method used to recognize revenue over time, as well as questions around the licensing of intellectual property, the type of license, and the timing of recognition for those licenses.
Okay, so then David, in addition to just asking how they've applied a particular method, is the staff also asking about which recognition method they're using, so point of time versus overtime?
Yeah, we do see that as being a frequent area of comment as well. It's not always clear whether revenue should be recognized at a point in time or overtime, and to the extent that there are judgments that go into that, that is something we've seen the staff ask about.
Okay. So, Michelle, let's turn to our next topic. This one's actually a personal favorite of mine, which is principal versus agent, or gross versus net presentation. And maybe before we get into the actual comments, can you just start things off by reminding us what changed between 605 and 606 in this area?
Sure. So the standard did change under 606, but not really that significantly. Under 605, there was 11 indicators, and in 606, there's 3 indicators. I think the biggest change, though, that we should remind our listeners is that 606 is really a control-based model versus just jumping straight into the indicators. So it's important to remember that under 606, we need to think about who actually controls the good or the service before it's transferred to the customer, before just jumping directly to the indicators.
So then if I'm a company that was adopting this or thinking about adoption, would we typically expect, because of sort of the change in the overall model, that we would see changes in this conclusion?
We haven't seen wholesale changes in this area, but companies would need to consider their fact patterns under the new guidance.
Okay, so then what types of comments are we seeing from the staff?
Typically, the types of comments that we're seeing from the staff here is around making sure that management hasn't just jumped directly to the indicators and that they have actually gone through and evaluated who controls the underlying good or service before it is transferred to the customer. The other item where we're seeing some questions that the staff is asking is, why didn't you update your language in your disclosure to reflect the new terminology that is used throughout 606?
Okay, so basically some companies carried forward their prior disclosures and maybe didn't fully update for some of the new considerations. Is that right?
Exactly. And in those cases, the staff is asking companies to update their disclosures to make sure that they have reflected the new principles and terminology within 606.
So this actually seems like it goes with the theme of all of our first four areas, which is really making sure that your disclosure lines up with the 606 framework terminology and requirements.
Absolutely.
Okay, so with that then, let's turn to our final area of comment related to capitalized costs. And I know this is a key difference in the models between 605 and 606. So David, can you take us through the types of comments we're seeing in this area?
Yeah, sure. I mean, it definitely is a key difference. Now under the new model, companies actually have to capitalize incremental costs of obtaining or fulfilling a contract. And we have noticed that this is an area that has impacted some registrants, even those that weren't significantly impacted on their revenue recognition. So most of the comments that we're seeing in this area relate to commissions. And commissions, of course, could be an incremental cost of obtaining a contract. So the types of questions that we're seeing from the staff relate to how amortization reflects the transfer of goods, the period over which those costs are being amortized, as well as commissions for contract renewals.
So then, David, I know we've had this theme of judgments and transparency. This one seems a little different. Is this still have the same type of judgment that the other areas do?
Yeah, it does. I mean, there are definitely areas that can require significant management judgment. So things like just making the determination of what is an incremental cost can be an area of judgment, as well as things like determining the customer life if you're in situations where the commission for a contract renewal isn't commensurate.
Okay, so it sounds like another reminder to companies that they need to make sure they're clearly disclosing their judgments. So, Michelle, one question for you before we move on to our general themes that we've seen. I know in the time of adoption, earlier publications, webcasts, etc., one of the things we spend a lot of time talking about is the requirement to disclose revenue on a disaggregated basis. That's not something we've talked about so far today. What types of comments are we seeing in that area?
Yeah, so the comments we've seen in this area have really focused on how companies selected the appropriate categories to use for their disclosures around disaggregated revenue. We've also seen the staff ask questions about how information provided outside of the financial statements, such as earnings releases, investor presentations, reconciles to how a company may have selected to disaggregate their revenue.
Okay, so then one thing, I guess, question I also have is, I know because this is an area of judgment, a lot of times companies will ask us, you know, should I benchmark, like look at what other people in my industry are doing or other similar companies. I mean, David, how do we normally respond to that question?
Yeah, I mean, we do caution companies against over-relying on benchmarking. I mean, at the end of the day, the categories are supposed to represent the effects of economic factors on their cash flows and their revenues. So companies really have to look at this on a case-by-case basis based on their circumstances.
Okay, so it sounds like then, putting together what you said and what Michelle said, is that this is really going to go back to your evaluation of your company, what else you're saying about your company, and then kind of considering that in the broader environment.
Right.
Before we wrap things up today, though, I have some more general questions. I know you've done quite a bit of analysis of sort of the overall scope or body of letters and comments that have been issued. And just curious, as you look at those, are we seeing any particular industries that have been targeted or where we've seen a higher incident of comments?
Yeah, we definitely are. I mean, when we look at the breakdown by industry, it's clear that companies in the technology industry have received by far the most comments. And that's not a huge surprise to us, just given that they were largely just more impacted by the revenue standard. Outside of that, there are other industries receiving a higher volume of comments. Generally speaking, those are things like the media industry, consumer markets, as well as pharmaceuticals and life sciences companies.
So if I'm an industry that you didn't just mention, should I be thinking that we are off the hook in terms of comments?
No, I wouldn't say that. I mean, I think it's definitely fair to say that there are companies in different industries, some are going to be affected more than others by the revenue standard, and that may drive the volume of comments that they get. But I think at this point, all companies in every industry are still fair game for the staff.
So then, Michelle, does that mean that it's only companies though who were significantly impacted by the new standard who could potentially expect to receive a comment?
Actually, no. Some of the registrants actually that we reviewed disclosed had an immaterial impact from the adoption of the revenue standard. So just because you have maybe an immaterial impact on the accounting side, it definitely doesn't mean that you have an immaterial impact on the disclosure side, as everyone will need to still evaluate the disclosure requirements under 606. And just one other quick reminder is to make sure that you are going beyond just reiterating what the guidance states in your disclosures, as it is really important to expand on what you mean and how you have evaluated the disclosure requirements under the new standard.
So, Michelle, I think that goes back to what you were saying earlier, or what we were all talking about earlier, which is really making sure that the disclosures that you're making in your financial statements are reflective of your business, the requirements, and the judgments that you're making.
Absolutely.
Okay, then another general comment, and I know this applies across the board for all SEC comment letters, sometimes it can take multiple rounds to resolve the comments. Are we seeing that with these questions, or you know, what's the timeline?
In some cases, yes, we are seeing these comment letters take multiple rounds to resolve. Oftentimes, those are in more complex areas of accounting, such as the determination of principal versus agent. We're also seeing instances where the staff will ask a question in the first round, and then in the second round, they'll go ahead and just ask a registrant to change their disclosures on a go-forward basis. More often than not, we are seeing these resolved in one round, and especially in circumstances where the registrant will respond and actually offer to change their disclosures in their initial response.
Okay, so then, Michelle, are we seeing a lot of companies make changes to their disclosures as a result of the staff comments?
Yeah, so we are seeing that most of the comments are being resolved by registrants updating their disclosures on a prospective basis. Also, we have seen instances where the questions that the staff is asking are relating to items that a company has said are immaterial. And in those instances, the company has responded to the staff saying that they will continue to monitor that item, and if it becomes material, they will update their disclosure on a go-forward basis.
So before we completely wrap things up today, I just want to check in with both of you on any final thoughts for our listeners. David, I'll start with you.
Yeah, sure. I mean, we do think that revenue disclosures are going to be a continued area of focus for the staff. Additionally, we did observe that the vast majority of comment letters were issued to large accelerated filers. So it is possible that the staff is taking sort of a top-down approach, and accelerated and non-accelerated filers could receive more comment letters in future filings. So it's definitely not a one and done, and it's important to keep in mind that just because a registrant did not receive a comment letter from the staff, or that comment letter did not comment on a particular disclosure, doesn't mean that the staff has given their stamp of approval for the disclosure or the accounting.
Okay, so then, Michelle, before I ask you for your final thoughts, I have a question for you, which would be, just listening to David as well as the comments today, you know, as a listener, I may be thinking, hey, I do want to make some changes, or I do want to update disclosures in my year-end statements. What type of advice are we giving to people if they're thinking, I'd like to make changes, but I've already made my quarterly disclosures?
Yeah, we do see this as an area where best practices are going to continue to emerge and evolve, and the staff's expectations and comments may evolve as well. So it is important to consider whether there are areas for continuous improvement, even if you already have disclosures on file. However, you would need to evaluate whether or not you are compliant with the requirements of the standard in prior periods.
Okay, that makes sense. Then, Michelle, before we completely wrap things up, any final thoughts from you?
Be sure to check out our publication, which includes all the items that we've discussed today, as well as some additional details and statistics available on CFODirect.com.
Okay, great. And with that, Michelle, David, thanks to both of you for being here today to share your insights from our review of the 606 comment letter comments. Some great reminders for companies to think about as they look ahead to their next round of reporting. And to our listeners, thank you for listening to this episode. For more information, please come find us at CFODirect.com. For PwC, I'm Heather Horn. Thanks for tuning in.
This podcast is brought to you by PwC, all rights reserved. PwC refers to the U.S. member firm or one of its subsidiaries or affiliates, and may sometimes refer to the PwC network. Each member firm is a separate legal entity. Please see www.pwc.com/structure for further details. This podcast is for general information purposes only and should not be used as a substitute for consultation with professional advisors.